And welcome everyone to Cancel the Cabal on BBS Radio. I am Stephen Roberts. I have a very special guest on today. I have life coach and author of the book, From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life You Love, Alex Braddy. Alex Braddy is a life coach, motivational speaker, and author. Her works help clients transform their lives into empowering them with personal development techniques, resources, and processes that can take action to create and live the life they truly want. Alex founded her company, Inspire and Create, Coaching and Consulting, after 15 years as a corporate research professional, five of which as a partner in a prestigious Washington, D.C. firm. Although there are many aspects of her prior career that she enjoyed, she also knew something was missing. As she embarked on her own journey of personal development, Alex realized the reason she felt stuck and frustrated was because she needed her life to be one she loved living, instead of the life she thought she should be living. As Alex developed her learning, she understood her calling was to assist other people in navigating their life journey. She combines her love of truly connecting with people on a meaningful level with her corporate background to provide a safe, nurturing, and productive environment for her clients. So, welcome to the show, Alex Braddy.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you're very welcome. I think one of the first questions I'd like to ask you, Alex, is what in your life led you to where you're at right now?
Oh, boy, what a great question. And of course, so many things lead us to where we are, right? Well, I was actually born and raised in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, and I am an immigrant to the United States. I came here with a backpack and a couple hundred dollars in my pocket. I had a job offer and I worked for a wonderful company in Pennsylvania that essentially sponsored my visa and gave me the gift of this fantastic, amazing country. And from there, I got really interested in market research, marketing. I did my MBA in Villanova. And then I got into cable news business in market research. And I continued my research career there and in another company where I ultimately became a partner for about 15 years. But at some point over the last few years, I realized that it just wasn't fulfilling me any longer. It had been at one point. I worked with wonderful, incredibly smart people, but it just wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. And so I really took the time to step back and evaluate my life and figure out what do I want to do, sort of in this next phase, if you like. And, you know, long story short, of course, but through all my personal development work and sort of self-discovery, I realized that I wanted to help other people, that I wanted to give back in a way that was much more meaningful for me. And so ultimately, I now am a coach. I'm a writer, obviously here to, you know, to talk about my book. And I'm also a motivational speaker. So it's been a really interesting journey. And even though those things sound very different from what I was doing before, I was able to bring a lot of those skills with me. I was already writing. I was already speaking and presenting in front of people. And I was already coaching. So now I'm doing all those things, but on a different platform and in a way that feels really good for me and that's helping other people.
I do have to ask you, Alex, I am on a network. It's based over in Dublin, Ireland. So I speak to Irish, Scottish, and British people every single day. You don't sound like any of them.
Oh, yes. Yes, my accent has definitely changed. It definitely does not sound like it used to when I first came here off the boat, if you like, or off the plane. I think over time, it just kind of has faded. I never did anything to change it. The only thing I consciously did was use American words so that I would be understood. So instead of talking about my trousers, I talk about my pants. Instead of the bin, it's the trash can. And so I think just over time, it's faded. But now that you know that, you'll probably pick up a few words and hear the lilt or the accent coming through.
Certainly, possibly. So what made you decide to write a book, Alex?
Well, it was related to this journey that I had where, you know, just as I said, I got to this point in my career where I was so burned out. I was so stressed and kind of over the whole thing, just not fulfilled anymore. And I really did take time out to evaluate what I wanted in life and how I wanted to set my life up. And in going through all of that and in finding the clarity that what I wanted to move to do this coaching, I realized that I wanted to also write and share what I had learned and not just my story, because, hey, we've all got a story, right? But also, how can the reader get unstuck, right? The book is called From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life You Love. And so many of us get stuck at some point in our life. So I wanted to essentially write something that was accessible, that was simple and effective, and provides people with the tools and resources they need to get unstuck if they're facing challenges in their life. So I really wanted to empower people and have this broader reach than just my coaching.
Yeah, I understand that. Being a life coach is quite a bit different than living in the corporate world. I noticed that you were a Fox News contributor, or are you still a Fox News contributor?
I was, yes, I was. I'm not anymore. I was when I was doing my research, yes. And it's very different from being in the corporate world. But interestingly, a lot of my clients come from that world. And so I am very intimately familiar with some of the challenges they're facing. So when I have, especially professional women, they come to me, they're burned out, they're very stressed about sort of their work-life balance and how do they make it all work. And the beauty of that is that I can relate to that. I know a lot of what they're dealing with in their work environment every day and some of those challenges. And so that's been another nice thing in this transition, is that I've been able to use that experience and that knowledge to help me effectively coach others.
Did you find it took a different kind of courage to leave that high-paying job and go into life coaching?
Yes, it definitely took courage. It really did. And it took me over a year to make the decision. I mean, it was not a light decision. I would sort of go back and forth and vacillate over it. And, you know, some days I'd wake up thinking I'm nuts. Some days I'd wake up thinking I got to do this. But what really kind of triggered it for me was once I realized, you know, that I kind of was living Einstein's definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And once I started to realize that I had to make the change and I had to figure out what I wanted, because that, you know, if I'm going to wait for someone else to change my life, it ain't happening. It really is up to you. So once I did that, and once I kind of uncovered some of the limiting beliefs I was walking around with and how to open up to other possibilities, I started to realize that I couldn't stay where I was, because I had this newfound understanding that I could create the life that I wanted, that I didn't have to just keep on with what I was doing because I felt I should, or it's the right thing to do, or I should just suck it up and get on with it. No, I could actually make a choice that could be much more fulfilling for me. And so once I realized that I could do that, I knew I couldn't stay. I had to sort of step into the light and own what this new world, this new meaning meant for me. And then from there, of course, it was figuring out, okay, if you know for sure you're leaving, then what is it you want to do next? And of course, that's when I started getting very clear about the coaching and the writing and the speaking.
Yes, I understand what you're talking about. I've got a little bit of a similar story, although different circumstances in that, but quite similar. Well, it sounds like you've really found your calling. You made enough financially to where you could quit your job and do what you love to do. What do you say to folks that don't really have that kind of a luxury? Well, let's just face it, Alex, millions of people are doing the type of job or career that they don't really love and they don't really want to be doing. What do you tell to people that want to do something that they love, but they can't really financially?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. I was very blessed in that I could take a time out, and I know a lot of people aren't in that position. So the one thing I would say is, you know, first and foremost, a calling doesn't have to be a career. You know, sometimes we think that if we find our passion, we find our calling or our higher purpose, whatever you want to call it, that suddenly we must make money doing that. Some people do that, and that's great, but not everyone. And sometimes it's really, it doesn't fit a lot of people. They want to do it in some other way. So a calling can take many, many forms. It can be working with a charity that you're passionate about. It can be volunteering. It can be doing a hobby that you absolutely love. So let me be clear. It doesn't have to be that you've got to change your job. There are other ways to find fulfillment in your life other than doing that and jumping out of, you know, into some kind of financial difficulty. No, I certainly would never advise anyone to do that. But I think if you are on this path and you really are trying to figure out, okay, what do I want? Start small and start taking just a few minutes every day, just 10 minutes every day to really reflect on yourself, what you want, and ultimately how to get there. That sounds very daunting at the beginning. How do I get there? But I think so many of us are in this, like, you know, this is why I called the book From Chaos to Clarity. We feel this chaos in our lives. It's always kind of go, go, go. We're doing this, we're running there. We never stop to actually contemplate, okay, what do I not like in my life? What do I like in my life? And how do I get more of what I like? We just kind of keep going, right? We're on those hamster wheels. We never pause. So I always tell people, hit that pause button and really start to get clear about what you want. And if that's really difficult, because it was for me when I was asked that question a few years ago, well, okay, what do you want? That was an incredibly difficult question to answer. Start with what you don't want, because you can answer that. Everybody can answer that. They can go to that very quickly. And use that. Make that list. Look at what you don't want and start using that as sort of a jumping off point to say, okay, well, if I don't want that, then what is it that I do want? And look for that clarity, because once you have that clarity, once you start to understand the things that you do want, you can start placing your focus there and start moving towards that. But I think the very first thing is to sort of take that time every day for yourself to do a little bit of inner work, to do a little bit of personal development so that you can set yourself up, because you know, and you may have experienced this yourself, Steve, wherever you go, there you are, right? So if your job sucks and everything kind of sucks right now, if you just quit and take another job, maybe it's going to be the same, because maybe there's something you got to figure out about yourself first so that you just don't keep playing out the same scenario, just in a different place.
Yes, you happened to mention Einstein a few minutes ago, and I believe he said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Exactly. And that was me for a long time. I mean, I think a lot of us do that. And we wonder, why does this keep happening to me? Why do I keep finding myself in a situation? Well, if you do find that it sort of seems to be the same thing happening, but just different players, different scenery, there's a lesson there. There's something that you're to be learning about that you haven't yet. So it keeps playing over and over in our lives. And until we step back, until we kind of look at that and we go inside for answers and get in touch with our real self, we can't ever figure that out. And that's a lot of what I talk about in the book, is how do you actually get in touch with your real self instead of listening to all that negative chit chat that's floating around, you know, that we all have going on. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. Who do you think you are to be doing that? Instead of listening to all that, going inwards to find the true answers from a positive voice that you do have inside you. It's just a matter of accessing it. And I walk the readers through how to do that. How do you access that more positive, nurturing voice? How do you access all those answers that you already have inside you?
Yes. Well, Alex, I think that many people do say those types of things like, you're not good enough, or you will never be able to do that, because they equate their own non-self-loving life with trying to bring yours down. And they have just too much envy, I think.
Yeah. And it's true, right? That, you know, when we're not really happy with what we've got going on, it's really easy to just like cherry pick other people and be distracted by them and project all of that onto them. And if you do have that envy, if you do have that jealousy, chances are it's about you, not the other person, right? It's about how you feel about yourself, and you may be being too hard on yourself, right? I mean, a lot of us have, and I talk about this too in the book, limiting beliefs that we're walking around with, and we've been carrying them with us for years. Often they get programmed in at an early age, and essentially, unless we discover what those are, we are operating from that place always. So, you know, just to take an example, I mean, when you were growing up, you may have heard your parents talking about money and saying, you know, you got to work really hard to earn every dime, or money doesn't grow on trees, or it's really hard to come by. And you absorb that as a child, because that's what we do. There's no blame here. It's not like a problem that your parents created, but you've absorbed that kind of thought pattern. And so operating through life, you may be coming from that place that, oh, money is so hard to earn and hold on to. You may find that you're always struggling to find money. So it's about also looking at some of those limiting beliefs and reprogramming them. That's another chapter in my book, is how do you actually identify those limiting beliefs? How do you release them if they're no longer longer serving you, and how do you replace them with new beliefs that do serve you, so that your mindset that you're coming from is different than what it is right now, that you're no longer focused on what this person's doing or that person's doing. You have that self-confidence and self-belief in you, and so you have your own validation. You don't need to go out and find it from other people. You don't need to sort of throw rocks at other people. You are working on yourself, and you're taking yourself to a better place.
Yes, I do understand. I do understand that. The book, Chaos, From Chaos to Clarity, how does that differ from the many other books that are out there?
What a great question. I love that, because, I mean, yeah, there's like, what, thousands, millions of self-help books out there. Gee, what does the world need another one for? And I have to say, the key difference is this. So many of those personal development books that are out there look at one specific aspect of self-help or self-awareness. And that's great if you're ready for a deep dive in one topic. But if you're not sure where to begin or even where you're stuck, my book is a really good place to start, because it's a soup to nuts guide. It essentially provides a roadmap for how to identify what's keeping you stuck, which may not be what you think it is. It's not always what it seems, by the way. Where it came from, how you can change it, and better yet, how can you move to a place where you truly are creating the life you desire and finding that calling, that higher purpose that we talked about earlier, and sort of helping you lay out the plan for that and move towards it. So it kind of takes you from A to Z in terms of, I'm so stuck, I don't even know where to begin, to freedom, empowerment, and real clarity around where you want to go and what you want to create in your life.
How does one tell if he or she is stuck in life?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think most people know they're already stuck. The symptoms show up pretty strongly. But to give you some examples, if your life isn't moving in the direction you want it to, and you don't know how to change that, or you've been trying to, but it isn't changing, you're stuck. If, like we talked about earlier, you're living Einstein's definition of insanity, right? Doing that same thing over and over, you're stuck. And if you are feeling burned out, if you are constantly stressed, if you have feelings of frustration or anxiety about where your life is at, or just simply knowing there must be more to life than what you're experiencing, that there must be more fulfillment than this, chances are you're stuck. You know, an analogy that someone has used recently that I think is rather funny, but it's quite vivid, is that some people have even described their feeling of stuck to me as emotional constipation, that they just can't get moving again. So if you have any of those feelings and you just don't know how to change it, or you're trying to, but it's not really working, chances are you're pretty stuck.
I just had something come up into my mind. Do you think some people are addicted to being stuck in life, or addicted to their sadness or insanity, if you want to call it?
They can be. I'm not sure I would call it an addiction, but certainly repeating those patterns over and over again and finding sort of a comfort in them. And I know that sounds rather counterintuitive. Like, if I have a crappy situation, why would I find comfort in that? But often we do, because we're used to it. We're familiar with it. So if we stay where we are, we can just kind of stay hidden. We can stay in this comfortable place, even if it's causing us pain, even if it's kind of counterproductive for us to be there. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because I do talk about that in the book, in terms of, you know, it does take some courage to make these changes in your life. Because let's face it, if you're stuck and you want to get unstuck, something has to change, right? It's not going to get unstuck unless there's change. And of course, the change that we're talking about is change on yourself, right? It's going inside. It's looking at what's going on there. What are those limiting beliefs? What is that negative chit chat that you're constantly listening to? How can you change that? And of course, you know, change is scary, especially when we're talking about ourselves. So the fear of that change can often keep people very much stuck and sort of repeating those painful patterns in their life. And as you said, you know, possibly even addicted to that because they're so comfortable with it. So it does take a little bit of courage to do this, but if you don't change, then how are you ever going to get out of that? How are you ever going to get away from the pain you're feeling, or the frustration that you have, or those feelings of burnout or stress? How are you ever going to address those? You know, are you just just going to go along with that for the next 10, 20, 30 years? I know when I thought about it in those terms, I wanted to get into the fetal position. Like, life cannot be like this for, you know, many more decades. It really has to change. So when you get to that place, you realize then, okay, I do have to do some change here. And I have to kind of, if you like, break that addiction of repeating these patterns over and over.
I find myself looking for just a whole different situation. I've got a chance to move about 600 miles away from where I am right now. And I don't really have a family or anything, a wife and children, but I just have my mother and my stepdad. But I've got the opportunity to move to Kansas City from Southwest Michigan, where I'm at, to join a group a lot like yours, life coaching, a wellness center. I'm contemplating it. Mm-hmm. I'm contemplating the move. I've never been to any kind of a addiction center or anything like that, but I do know that, like in Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, they teach you to get away from your environment, get away from the situations that you're in, get away from the toxic area. Mm-hmm. Is that what people need to do, really, just to get unstuck?
Yes and no. I think there's more to it. I think your environment certainly has an impact. I think it's Jim Rohn. He's a motivational speaker. I think it's his quote that, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. The people you spend time with really do have an impact. So do look around and see who you're holding company with. Look at yourself and say, okay, I'm the average of that. Is that what I want to be? Am I around people who are supporting me, encouraging me, loving me, or am I with people who are not respecting me or not loving me or trying to drag me down? Those things absolutely have an impact, because it makes it even harder for you if you embark on this path of change. If you're trying to, you know, improve yourself, work on yourself, be a better person, how can you when you're kind of being pulled down by the people that are around you? So yes, I do think environment is a major part of it. It's not all of it though, because like I said earlier, wherever you go, there you are. So you can, you know, uproot and go move somewhere else. You may find that you basically have exactly the same experience in that new place because you haven't looked at what's going on with you, right? Like, do I have some insecurities around, you know, my work or relationships or whatever it is? Again, those limiting beliefs that we have, that's where we're operating from. Those are going on in our subconscious. And we're not even aware sometimes that we're operating from that place. So I think there's both. I think it's environment certainly can have an impact, but truly, you know, where real change happens is within you. And it is up to you to start that and to continue that. And certainly I do talk about that in the book, From Chaos to Clarity. How do you essentially make that first step in kind of looking into the unknown, right? Looking inside yourself. What am I going to uncover? It seems a little scary. But yeah, I mean, you are who you are. And if you want things to change for yourself, part of that is changing who you are for the better.
Yes. I say a lot often on air, Alex, that we can be our own worst enemies.
Oh, certainly. I think we're all guilty of that, me included. My hand is high in the air right now. We do. We get in our own way, right? And a lot of that is when we listen to our negative chit-chat that's going on in our heads. Right. So let's say we have a, you know, like for, take your example. You have this sounds like a great opportunity to move and be with this wonderful group of people. You know, your true self is saying, wow, what a great opportunity. You know, you really might like that. It could be really great. You could help people. You could get a lot of fulfillment from it. And maybe the minute you start thinking that, along comes the negative talk radio, right? That comes in and goes, what are you talking about? We can't move. I don't want to move somewhere else. I don't want to start a whole new, like trying to make social networks. You can't do that. And what if you're not good enough? What if you don't live up to all the expectations they have of you? Better to stay put where you are. Better to stay with what we know, right? And so that negative chatter can keep you stuck in your comfort zone. And it is really important to sort of distinguish between the negative chatter, which isn't real. It's not real, versus what is real, which is your true self, right? Separating those two voices that you have and training yourself to essentially acknowledge the chatter for what it is and just kind of put it off to the side and then tune in to your higher self, your true true self, the one that does have the answers, that does know what's best for you, that isn't kind of scared of the change. I mean, yes, there's still fear, but it knows that you can move through it. It knows that this is the right path for you. And I have a whole exercise in the book that goes through that, like, how do you actually distinguish between those two voices? And how do you tune into that positive voice and not keep listening to that negative voice?
Yeah, I equate it a lot of times with, well, people know that there's something wrong. They just can't put their finger on it, like you mentioned earlier. How does one start to know if they need change, but they just don't know how to, or they just don't know where to change?
Yeah, right. I think a lot of people sort of don't know where to begin, right? It's like, well, oh, how do I even start on this? It seems so big. Well, first off, the mere recognition that something has to change, that is the start. That is the beginning. So good news there. The fact that you're recognizing that, you've already begun. And, you know, but of course, if we take a journey, we got to keep taking one step after another. So the next step after that initial recognition is realizing that we have all the answers inside of us already, that it's not about other people and what they said or did or didn't do and the things that happened to us. Yes, those are all experiences we can learn from. Yes, some of us have had very traumatic experiences, but we have to first acknowledge that we create our own world. We create our own experience. And so my book walks you through how to realize that and how to understand why it's all our own creation. And believe me, that can be a bitter pill to swallow. I know when I first was dealing with that concept, I was indignant at this thought. What do you mean I created this? I don't even like it. So why would I have created it? It makes no sense whatsoever. But in fact, we do, right? Because of the other things you were talking about earlier, because we have these limiting beliefs, because we stay in our comfort zone, because it's easier to stay within our sort of little addiction of how we've been living before instead of stepping into something new. So it is about the fact that you create your own world. But the good news about that is, even if you've created something you don't like right now and you don't know how to change it or fix it, you actually can. Since you created that, you can create what you want. The difference is, often we create what we don't want by default. We don't really realize what we're doing. We're making choices, but we're not really conscious to them. And the difference here is, you can become a deliberate creator. You can be very clear on what you want. You can make choices from a much better place. And so that's the next step, is sort of evaluating that in terms of, what are the choices I've made that brought me here? And what are the choices that I want to make, that I need to make, to move me to a different place?
I was going to mention, self-scrutinization can be very difficult for, well, millions and millions of people. Do you find clients not liking to look at themselves in the mirror?
Yeah, I think it's hard at the beginning. But, you know, when my clients come to me, they already kind of know that that's what needs to happen, because they're ready, right? They may be scared of the change, and they may be wondering, what is this all going to be about? What am I going to uncover if I actually take these steps? But they know that it essentially, if you want real change, if you do want to create this life that you want, it does require that inner reflection. It does require going inwards and looking at what's going on. And actually, the greatest thing, I think, is that once you do that, you realize it's not scary. And it's actually really helpful, because now I understand why I did some of those things I did. Now I understand where those beliefs come from that are operating in my subconscious. Now I understand how I can change them. And I can make that decision that, okay, I may have picked up some limiting belief years ago when I was a child, but it's not my belief. It was someone else's. And guess what? I'm an adult now. I don't have to subscribe to that belief anymore. I can change it. And so I talk about all that in the book and how you can do that. And I think once people have that first experience of sort of that, getting that new knowledge and getting that new empowerment that they can change it, that certainly is a big leap. And that's when sort of a lot of that initial fear, it starts to fall away, because this isn't scary anymore. This is actually, it's actually kind of fun in a way, because because you're taking back control. You feel that empowerment. Instead of feeling like, how do I change this? I'm lost. I'm stuck. You start to realize that, oh, I get it. I understand how I can really direct my thoughts, direct my choices, and ultimately direct my life the way I want to.
Yeah. How would you go about teaching me to go from stuck to unstuck?
Well, the first thing that we would do is, like I said earlier, hit that pause button, right? Just stop and evaluate that situation that you're in right now, almost like a neutral observer. You know, assess the situation for what it is. And this is key, to accept it. Even if you don't like it, even if you just like hate where you're at right now, this is a really important point. You have to accept it first, because if you don't accept it, you can't change it. You're constantly kind of pushing against it. And actually that locks it in place. So we would hit the pause button. We would look at your situation and work on having you accept it for what it is. And then we move into those steps of how to change it and what you want it to change. So we'd start looking at, you know, what you want in life, right? So we'd probably begin there by saying, okay, well, you know, in these different aspects of your life, what do you not want? What are you not enjoying? What would you like to change? And then we look at, based on that, what do you want? What do you want to create? And we look at that. Essentially, there's a gap there, right? There's a big gap between what I don't want and what I do want. And so then we start to work together to create a plan that essentially builds a bridge between where you are right now, the stuff you don't like, and where you want to be, the stuff that you do want to have in your life. And sort of a third element that comes in along the way is starting to pay attention to your thoughts and where you place your focus. Because what we say, what we think, what we feel, what we believe inwardly, it all contributes to the outward reality that we create. So when you realize that you hold the power to create the life you want, and it's by where you channel your energy and your thoughts. So it's about starting to focus on those things you want and how you want to feel. Start looking at how those can become possible for you instead of being stuck back on what you don't like. And of course, it's so easy to do that, right? It's so easy to get caught up in all the stuff that we don't enjoy or don't like. And so again, that's something that I have exercises for this in the book, From Chaos to Clarity, is how do you actually retrain your mind so that it defaults into focusing on what you want instead of what's very normal for most people, defaulting into what you don't want. And how do you do that so you can work on it, you know, over time, and it becomes, like I said, your default sort of scenario to do that. So those are just some of the initial things that we would work on. And in just going through some of those, you'll start to get some forward momentum. You'll start to feel like, oh yeah, things are moving again. I see it. I can see that I can move this again, and that I can empower myself to direct my life where I want it to go.
I was going to use the metaphor as reprogramming. Do you think that you are reprogramming people, clients?
Yes, reprogramming is a key part. And that's, yeah, I have like a whole chapter devoted to that in the book. So essentially, when I talk about reprogramming, here's what I'm talking about. So we all have subconscious beliefs. They're those limiting beliefs that I was talking about earlier. And we're basically, it's like a program that we're running on. So, and often without even knowing it, I like to think of it like a computer. I use this analogy a lot because we're always on our devices these days. So you use those desktop applications and you don't really think much beyond that, right? You just turn your computer on, you use whatever you're going to use, and hey, presto, there you go. But underneath all of that is an operating system that makes everything work, that makes all those programs actually function. And our subconscious beliefs are basically our operating system, right? It's the same idea. So unless we become aware of them, that there is this operating system in our subconscious, and we assess them in terms of, are these beliefs still serving me well? We can stay stuck in place or in a pattern of behavior because, you know, our subconscious is 85% of our mind. It's way bigger. The 15% is your conscious. So even though you may think you, like, I want to do something, if your subconscious has a problem with that, or it has some limiting belief around whatever it is you want to do, chances are you aren't going to do it, or you're not going to get there, because the subconscious can be that powerful. And so the process that I have in the book, it's really quite simple in terms of how you reprogram. But of course, it takes more than just reading through it, right? It requires a little bit of commitment to actually work through the steps, to do the exercises and the inner reflection. And we've talked about this, it can be a little uncomfortable to look at that at the beginning, to go in there and check out our operating system. And it at times, it can certainly be challenging to release some of those programs, because often we've been running on them for decades. You know, we may have learned them when we were like 8, 9, 10 years old, and now we're, you know, 40, 50, 60. I mean, we're talking a long time of running on these programs, but that doesn't mean you can't release it and that you can't change it. Actually, anyone can. And if you work the steps and go through the exercises and do the inner reflection and the inner work, you can change them so that you create your own new operating system that has a whole set of beliefs that work for you, that serve you well, and that are propelling you in the direction that you want to go.
Is it just simply repetitiveness, retraining the brain, Alex?
Some of it is habit. Yeah, some of it is that, you know, because certainly even when we learn new processes for doing things or new ways to think about things, we often backslide because we've been so used to doing it another way. Like when I was talking earlier about, you know, where do you focus your thoughts? It's so easy to get caught up in, you know, all the stuff that happened today that you didn't like, you know, come home and complain about this, that, and the other. But there is another way to think, and that's to come home and think about all the things that went right today, all the things that went well, and to be thankful for that. So there is a little bit of habit retraining in that, that even though you know that, oh, you know, actually it would be better for me, and it would certainly put me in a much better place if I focus on what I want and what's going well, rather than what's not. But boy, you know, I kind of like to wallow around in those complaints, You know, I kind of like to bitch about that a little bit. And, you know, I sort of get satisfaction out of it. That to some extent is, you know, you mentioned this earlier, that's an addictive behavior. And so some of it is, yeah, like learning to catch yourself doing that and then to redirect. This doesn't happen overnight. It takes a little bit of time, and it certainly requires some self-awareness and some self-monitoring on some of this in terms of your thoughts.
What 3 tips would you offer someone to get started on moving their life forward?
Well, the first one I would say, you know, is hit that pause button, like we talked about before, right? You have to assess your situation for what it is first. You can't really move from the situation unless you're very clear on what it is. And, you know, as I talked about earlier, getting clear on what you don't want and what you do want. And then I would say, you know, be consistent with what you're doing in terms of taking just a few minutes every day, right? Take those 10 minutes, that's all it is. I'm not talking about, you know, you got to sequester yourself away for hours on end to sort of do this self-contemplation. No, 10 minutes, and give that time to yourself. Turn off your phone, like disconnect, and do that inner work. And when you start small like that, it's very manageable. Just 10 minutes devoted to the project of me. Let's face it, we devote a lot of time to a lot of stuff that really isn't very meaningful, right? So if you're not sure where to grab 10 minutes back in your day, let me tell you, it's 1% of your whole day. And I'm guessing that maybe you could like trim back on your social media or, you know, some of these other things that we get distracted with. So take 10 minutes every day and take it for yourself. Do that inner reflection. Do the inner work. And some of the exercises in my book are super helpful for that in terms of getting used to doing that. The third thing I would say is be consistent with it, right? You know, don't do it like one day a week and expect that like something's going to change. No, it's the compound effect. I mean, when you do small things every single day, it really does have an impact. So do find that 10 minutes a day, carve it out, give it to yourself, and do the work. You know, do some of the, pick up my book, From Chaos to Clarity, do some of those exercises in there, do some inner reflection on what do I want in my life, and start focusing on that, what I want, instead of what I don't want.
I think I understand where you're going there, yeah. A lot of times on shows, I will talk to people about getting out of their comfort zone, getting out of their box, looking outside the box. What do you tell people to who find it challenging to look outside their comfort zone, look outside the box.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It can be really hard to do that. But here's a dirty little secret about stepping out of your comfort zone. That's where the magic happens. And it's only where the magic happens. So when you're waiting for something really good to happen, when you're waiting for, you know, something magical to happen, it ain't going to happen where you are. You can't get to those wonderful things that you want unless you step out of your comfort zone. I mean, there's a reason it's called that, right? Because it's comfortable. It's okay to be there. You know it. You're familiar with it. But here's one of the most important motivators, and certainly it was for me anyway, is that once you've gotten yourself unstuck, once you have this greater self-awareness, and once you begin to understand your higher purpose or calling, are you just going to forget it all exists and go back to what you were doing before? No, you can't. And that's kind of the beautiful part of this. Once you realize the strength and power you have within you, you begin to understand that you can really do whatever you want. You can create the life you want. And you just start putting one foot in front of the other to get there. And before you know it, you have stepped out of your comfort zone. You just didn't even realize it that you did it because you literally put one step in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. So it doesn't always have to be some really scary leap. Sometimes we do have to make big leaps of faith, but stepping out of your comfort zone can be just that. It's a step. It's not a huge leap. And it is. It's kind of like that, you know, you talk about a box like Pandora's box. Are you going to put it all back in there? No. You're almost compelled to do it, to sort of find that magic and to take that step and move out of your comfort zone.
Do you think people are trying to live someone else's life with a false illusion, Alex?
You know, I think that sometimes we are. I think that sometimes we make decisions from sort of, you know, this place of I should, right? I should do this or I should do that. You know, when you find yourself saying should, pause for a moment and ask yourself, who does that should belong to? Are you saying, you know, I should stay in this job because it's what people expect me to do? Or, you know, I should study a certain course at university because my parents will approve of that. Or I should do this because such and such won't approve, right? I mean, I think that when that happens, when you're doing all that shoulding, and we don't even realize that we're thinking or saying it sometimes, we do sometimes end up living other people's lives because we just sort of think we've got to go along with those expectations. And I think it helps to start paying attention to this because should can also be us needing to do something rather than wanting to do something. So, for example, are you agreeing to take on a project for a friend because you want to, or because you feel you should, or that you need to prove you're a great friend by doing it, right? So when we come from that place of should or need, when we're sort of reacting to what we think others expect of us or what they're going to approve of, we're often imposing constraints on ourselves that are not real. And we're essentially allowing others to direct what's happening in our lives rather than us making a conscious decision about it.
That's where I was going to go. And you actually went there. The word should, is that an indicator that that you are living someone else's life?
And you just... Yeah, I mean, it can be. And that's why, you know, when I hear people saying should, I nearly always now say, stop, just stop for a moment. Why should you do that? Let's just look at that for a moment. And how many times do you use the word should in a day? I know I still do. And I'm kind of like the should police these days with myself and with other people. It really is a case of pause when you say that and ask yourself, whose should is this? Why should I be doing this? Or why should I think I need to go here or do that or whatever it is that you're talking about? Really look at that, because you may find more often than not that it's not your should, it's someone else's. You really do need to unpack that to look at it and say, okay, am I really acting sort of in a place where this is empowering me, right? And I'm not saying that we don't help people, that we don't do things for other people. It's not that at all. But often we can find ourselves sort of being swept away on the, well, I really should do this and I really should do that. And then there's nothing of us left because we're doing all this shooting. So it really is about looking at what you want to do, if it's serving you in a good way. I don't mean that in a selfish way, like serving sometimes sounds like a selfish thing, but in terms of kind of our purpose, what we're doing in our lives, and is it really helping us where we need to be, or is it contributing to us being stuck?
Yeah, I think a lot of people make decisions on a false illusion, Alex. I think they make decisions on what someone else appears to be, what someone else's life is. And I think that's really a false way of looking at oneself.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. And it's true. I mean, a lot of us make decisions based on sort of what we're projecting we think the other person is thinking. You know, so much gets lost in communication, or rather the lack of, right? Because sometimes you have, you know, you take these actions, you think you're doing what someone else wants you to do, and then, you know, you have the conversation, you know, it could be next week, it could be next month, it might be a year from then, and you say, well, I thought you wanted me to do that. No, I never said that. I didn't say you should you should do that, or you know, you made that decision. So, you know, we project onto other people some of these sort of thoughts that we have ourselves, and we don't realize it. We're just sort of assuming that someone wants us to do something, or thinks that we should, or expects us to. But a lot of it is coming from ourselves. And again, you know, getting back to those limiting beliefs, those are often driving those things and sort of taking us to that place of, well, I really should work harder because, you know, that's what I need to do. That's what people expect of me. Well, is that a limiting belief about what it, you know, what work means, or how hard you have to work to earn money, or how much money you can work is determined by specifically how hard or how many hours you're putting in. So it does help to take a step back from that and kind of unpack it and look at what's really driving that should, or what's really behind this sort of projection that I'm putting on someone else about what I'm to be doing with my life.
Yeah. You talk about releasing the negative emotions from our past and about forgiving people. How can we do that when we've been wronged so many times, or by the people, mostly by the people we love, or the people that claim to love us?
Yeah, this can be a challenging concept. And thank you for bringing it up. I do talk about this in my book, From Chaos to Clarity. We often want to point the finger of blame at someone or something else. But there are two crucial ways to look at this idea of forgiving, especially when we feel we've been wrong. So the first is this. And some of the things that really, you know, push your buttons and get you kind of all fired up and, you know, indignant, take a look in the mirror and see if this is something you sometimes do as well. Very often, the things that bother us the most are things we do ourselves. Like, just a very simple example, but I mean, being cut off in traffic. We get so mad about that, but when was the last time you didn't turn on your blinker? Or maybe you unwittingly cut someone off and you don't even know you did it. So some of these things, the smaller things that really kind of fire you up, chances are you may be doing them yourself. Now that's a relatively minor example. So let me go to my other point, and this often helps with those bigger, deeper wounds that people deal with. And that is that forgiveness does not mean you are condoning someone or their actions, okay? Nor are you letting them away with something. And I think that's what trips up a lot of people, is that if I forgive you, then I'm basically saying it's okay that you did this and I'm letting you off the hook. No, it's not that. Instead, the act of forgiveness is about releasing yourself. It's about releasing yourself from these low vibrating emotions of anger and revenge and sadness and fear that are contributing to you feeling stuck. So, you see, as long as we harbor resentment and blame or anger about something, the more we actually stay stuck in that place. We can't actually get out of that place unless we forgive. And so in doing the forgiveness, in moving through that forgiveness, you're actually setting yourself free. You're not setting the other person free. You're setting yourself free. And that's really, you know, when people look at it that way, that can often then help them move through that forgiveness that, okay, I can release myself so that I don't have to spend the next 10 years hand-wringing over this and, you know, feeling hurt and feeling angry. Because those emotions, they're eating away at you inside. And unless you release them, you are not getting unstuck. That is the bottom line on that.
That's some good stuff there, Alex. It really is. You talk about using the law of attraction. A lot of us know about the movie The Secret, but if it was that easy, wouldn't everyone be walking around manifesting whatever life they feel that they want?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up because of course not everybody is walking around living the life they want, right? And they may even be, you know, using some of those techniques that are talked about in that movie, The Secret. And I think, you know, it is a common misconception about the law of attraction, right? So when people don't attract what they want, even though they may sort of think about it a lot and put their focus on it, they sort of get disillusioned. They're like, oh, this is all, you know, it's hokum. But there's actually more to it than that. Okay. So first, we have to be very clear about what it is that we want to attract. We have to provide details and specifics. Okay. It's not enough to say, I want a new job. Well, okay, but like what? In what field? How long do you want your commute to be? How much do you want to earn? What hours do you want to work? I mean, I'm talking, you got to get specific, real details around what you want. Then we have to make sure our subconscious programming that we talked about earlier is on board with what our conscious mind is asking for. So if it's not, we have some reprogramming to do. Otherwise, like I said earlier, you can want it all you want consciously, but subconsciously, if you've got some limiting belief going on, it's going to block you from getting that, from getting what you want. And then the third thing I would say is we have to be in an allowing space. Open to receive what we're asking for in whatever form it might take. And what I mean by that is not being attached to the outcome, right? So let's say, take my example that you want a new job. It's not about being attached to, okay, well, it's absolutely got to be with this particular company. Well, sure, there may be one specific company you want to work for, but there are other possibilities. And so it is about detaching from a very specific outcome so that we can allow other things to come in and bring us what we want. So, and then the last thing I'll say is, most importantly, right, after you've done all that inner work, you've gotten very clear, you've added the details to what you want, you've done some reprogramming around your limited beliefs, and you're in that allowing space, guess what? You gotta take action, right? You can sit around and think about all this stuff and be in that great inner place till the cows come home, but unless we take action, it's unlikely that anything is going to happen. So there are a few more steps to all of that than just think of what you want, place your focus on it, and hey, presto, it'll happen. There's a little bit more involved in that. And a lot of those steps are in my book, From Chaos to Clarity.
You talk about raising your energy vibration and looking for the positive in everything. Are we supposed to just put a happy face on all the time when things are not going well?
I love this. No, absolutely not. In fact, that's one of the worst things we can do, right? Because if we just pretend to be happy when we're not, we're essentially suppressing real feelings. And that means they're getting stuck inside us and they're keeping us stuck in life. So instead, we want to acknowledge our feelings, whatever they are. And, you know, it's always okay to have a feeling, even if it's, you know, because sometimes people label feelings as bad. Well, it's bad to feel angry. It's bad to feel sad. It's bad to feel resentment. No, it's actually not. Now, obviously, what actions you take could be good or bad, but the feelings themselves are not bad. We actually want to acknowledge and actually feel the emotion. And when you feel the emotion, when you do acknowledge it, you can also then take a moment to understand why we're having that emotional experience, right? Only then can you essentially make a conscious choice to release it and replace it with an emotion or thought that might better serve you. So no, don't ever ignore those emotions. Your emotions essentially are like your internal GPS. They're actually giving you information about what's going on and whether it's, you know, it's in alignment with who you are and what you want to do or whether it's not. So always pay attention to your emotions because they're valid and they're trying to send you messages. They're trying to communicate with you.
What if I or anyone else does everything that you describe in the book and we still can't figure out what our calling or higher purpose is?
I'm so glad you asked that. Understanding your calling or higher purpose in life can happen at different speeds for different people. I think that's the key thing to know here. So I have some people who've read the book, they've used the processes in there and they identified their calling almost immediately. I mean, it was really fast. Yes, it still took some time to, you know, take action and fulfill that once they'd identified it, but they could see it pretty clearly and they could start building a plan to get there. And then, you know, I have other clients who have taken a little longer. They need more time to process some of the ideas and concepts, but they still get there in the end. You know, the key here isn't really whether you can figure it out, because you can. Anyone can. The more challenging piece is essentially following through and then being, as we've talked about, being ready to step out of your comfort zone so you can embrace the new calling or higher purpose. So anyone can figure it out. And actually, the exercise and the steps that I lay out in my book are very, very simple. And if you follow them, chances are you're going to find it pretty quickly and start to get a much clearer picture of what you want to do, what that purpose is that you have in life.
Well, this is a bit of a personal question here, but there are people out there like Louise Hay, Wayne Dyer, Tony Robbins, and many, many others that have been doing this for a long, long time. I think I remember seeing Tony Robbins back in the mid-80s, I think, or somewhere in there. But why should someone buy your book instead of following another life coach?
Yeah, thank you. I love that question. That is just such a terrific question. Because yes, I'm basically an unknown writer right now. And all those people that you mentioned, they are awesome. Every single one of them. And as you said, hey, they're tried and tested, right? They've been working in this personal development world for a long time. And of course, they really know their stuff. What I bring to the table, I believe, is a new perspective on the personal development journey, as well as essentially a proximity to knowing and understanding that feeling of being stuck and all those emotions that go along with it. So the other folks you mentioned haven't been stuck for a very long time, and they may no longer be as familiar with that pain and frustration of living like that. With me, I do. I've been there fairly recently, and so I'm able to really identify with where my readers are at. And I think that, you know, certainly the feedback I've had on the book, that's something that people really like, is that they can absolutely relate to what I'm talking about, because it's basically exactly what they're experiencing. Obviously, they have, you know, different players, different scenery in their lives, but the essential sort of the outline of it, of what's going on and how they feel, it's so relatable because they are feeling it too.
So tell me, Alex, when someone finishes following the steps from chaos to clarity, what should they be experiencing?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great final question. I think people are going to feel empowerment. They're going to experience clarity and joy and a new understanding of how they truly can create their own lives. I've even had some readers say they were able to identify their life's purpose and their calling by working through all the exercises in the book. And of course, we just talked about that. So essentially, if you follow the steps I've laid out, you really can start to move from that darkness of feeling stuck and into the light of freedom and a deep knowing that you can do whatever you choose.
Well, the book is From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life You Love. And the website is alexbrady.com. Do you have any other contacts or websites or connections or anything like that you would like to give out?
Sure. And I would just say the book's available on Amazon in Kindle, paperback, and audio, any which way you like. And you gave my website, thank you. My email also, if you want to get in touch with me, I do coach, I do speak, as well as writing the book. My email is Alex, A-L-E-X, at alexbrady.com, A-L-E-X-B-R-A-T-T-Y.com.
Well, I thank you once again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. This has really been a wonderful hour.
Oh, you're very welcome. And have a good day over there.
You too. Thank you.
All right. So for Alex Brady, I am Stephen Roberts, and this has been Cancel the Cabal on BBS Radio. Thank you, everyone.